Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:23 British Summertime. Today is June 22nd. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. This has been an eventful week. You started out the week with particularly high anxiety with regard to the Eurozone and the second bailout for Greece, and whether we were going to have what type of solution there was going to be, or whether Europe was going to get its act together and actually put in place a mechanism that would defray the risk of contagion. Well, we got at least a partial answer to that question yesterday, where we've had lengthening of maturities, we've had lowering of interest rates, and the EFSF has been allowed a greater ability to intervene in the bond markets by potentially buying in the secondary market. So the ECB has also loosened its opposition to a partial default by Greece. So that has all been greeted really quite favorably by markets. In the commodity sector, the gold price is currently sitting at $1,602, having spent much of the week ranging around that region, and the silver price is back above $40, having been a little bit volatile in approximately a $2 range for most of the week. Both platinum and palladium are also firmer in here. Just about all of the industrial metals are firmer, as are most of the agricultural commodities. In the government bond sector this week, we saw that the majority of government bonds fell rather sharply in the early part of the week, but found at least short-term support in here today. Particularly the German Bund, which had been seen as a safe haven for European investors for much of the last few weeks, it fell rather aggressively in the early part of this week and found at least short-term support in here today. In the currency markets, I suppose if we think about the things that people are worrying about, they've certainly been worrying about Europe. When I was in Vancouver talking to the Canadian Society of Technical Analysts, their primary concern 2 weeks ago was what was happening in Europe. They were also worried about what's happening in the USA. The August 2nd deadline for raising the debt ceiling is approaching. This is a storm in a teacup compared to the European debt crisis. Of course, that is provided that they can get past all of this political squabbling, which is really quite counterproductive. And there's also a heightened degree of anxiety with regard to the potential for a Chinese slowdown. I'm left wondering, as we come to the end of this week, whether the decline in sentiment towards China has more to do with the Sino-forest debacle and the pressure under which the Chinese reverse merger sector in the USA has been put over the last few months. Has that probably contributed more to the decline in sentiment than actually conditions in China? There's an excellent email in here today from a subscriber who is Chinese and has just returned from a trip to China, and it recounts his impressions. But chief among them has been that that China has world-class infrastructure. It's got infrastructure comparable, if not superior, to most countries in Europe and also the USA. The middle class is growing. The middle class is well capitalized, has very low debt, and is increasingly moving towards consumption. And the rise of the middle class is helping to support bull markets in everything that they need and want to support their higher standards of living. Consumer stocks generally are doing well. Consumer stocks in China, in particular, are doing well, particularly against the wider market in China. but it's a global theme. One can look at the fast moving index in India, and it's been outperforming the Nifty and the Sensex really quite impressively. And if one looks at the plethora of globally oriented consumer-led shares in Europe and the USA, they have been outperforming in outstanding fashion for much of the last few years. And that is being driven by the rise of the middle class, not only in China, but right across Asia, where we have the growth center of the global economy, where we have the largest populations in the world, increasingly large numbers of people being lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes. They aspire to the standard of living that many of us take for granted, and they're increasingly well able to pay for it. One of the things that these people want, once they've achieved the bare necessities, people move on to consumer goods. And as the middle class increases, so does the proportion of people that are in the high net worth bracket. And just as in every expansion of the middle class since the term nouveau riche was coined for the bourgeoisie in France more than a couple of hundred years ago, the new rich want to display their wealth, and that's helping to drive major bull markets in luxury shares, everything from Burberry to BMW. But that's also helping to drive the bull market in gold. In Asia, people are more interested in gold as a tactile substance. They want to touch it, they want to hold it, they want to wear it, and that is the love side of this major bull market, which has shown positive returns in US dollars every year for the last 10 years, and this year is looking no different. Gold had a rhythm to it from 2001. It broke upwards in September of 2001, 2003, 2005, 2007, 2009, and 2010, and then it broke upwards in April of 2011, and it hit a new high this week. So when one looks at a 10-year chart of gold, the last 2.5 years are far more consistent than the 7 years that went previously. And if that tells us one thing, it tells us that the gap between supply and demand is increasing. Demand is increasingly strong relative to supply. And the pace of this bull market in gold, which is already 10 years long, has been increasing. With that increasing demand dominance, then it's not unreasonable to expect that investors are beginning to anticipate the breakouts in an odd numbered year, which, if the previous pattern had held to form, would have been in September 2011. And what we've definitely seen in the last few months has been a pickup in the pace of the advance in US dollar terms. What's a little bit different on this occasion is that gold is now also increasing against comparatively strong currencies. When I was in Australia back in May, Australian investors weren't particularly enamored with gold because it had been going sideways for approximately 2 years when priced in Australian dollars. Gold has been remonetized in the eyes of investors, and in the FX markets, the ambition is to match the strongest with the weakest currencies. And for this purpose, gold is a currency. So when one looks at gold denominated in Australian dollars, you're matching two very strong currencies. When one looks at it in US dollars, you're matching a strong currency with a weak currency. And the US dollar this week was really quite weak. Against the euro, it was up to 144 yesterday. It's closing out the week just below that level. And against the pound, it was stronger than 163 earlier today, but it's closing out just below that level. And against the Australian dollar, the Aussie dollar is up to $1.8, $8.50, and that is a considerable firming within a 3-month range. And it looks like the Australian dollar is going to push higher from here. The Canadian dollar was also stronger in here this week, although slightly easier as we come into the closes here. So the US dollar is weak against a whole host of currencies, and particularly those in Asia. When one looks at the Asian dollar index, it's pushing on to new highs, and that's an incredibly impressive move. The relative strength that we're seeing in Asia, particularly in the ASEAN region, is really quite remarkable. Today, we saw the Nasdaq hitting a new recovery high. And it was only a few weeks ago that people were beginning to come out with some really quite extraordinarily bearish forecasts. But the Nasdaq has pushed on to new high ground. The Indonesian market broke upwards and has pushed on to new highs in the last 10 days. The Philippines is also a tower of strength in here. The Malaysian market hasn't yet broken upwards, but is really quite firm within its range. The Taiwanese market, led by its banking sector, is finding support in the region of its 200-day MA and appears to be pushing upwards again. Bank leadership is something that we put a lot of emphasis on at Fuller Money, and banks. It would be unreasonable to expect banks to be leaders in Europe and the USA following the financial crisis in 2008. They were the epicenter of the problem. They're unlikely to be part of the solution in terms of stock market performance, and that's certainly been the case. But if one looks at Asia, where you have comparatively low debt levels, you have low personal debt, you have low leverage, you have high savings rates, strong growth, and a burgeoning middle class, then it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect banking sectors to outperform. And that's exactly what we're seeing in Indonesia, in the Philippines, in Taiwan, and in a number of Asian countries. It's been banking sectors that have been among the leaders. And banks should do well in a major bull market because they're liquidity providers. And if liquidity providers can't do well in a bull market, then that is something that we need to pay attention to. That banks led on the upside in 2003 in the USA. They peaked well early in 2007, whereas the wider market didn't peak until 2008. So that's definitely something to watch in the Asian markets over the next few years, provided those banking sectors are performing more or less in line with the wider market, then we can probably continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. In the commodity sector, gold has also attracted a significant amount of interest in highly indebted countries as a safe haven because it is a strong currency, and it's been remonetized in the eyes of investors. Silver, which has had a precipitous fall earlier this year from $50 to almost $30, is back up to $40 and looks more likely to go up than down over the short to medium term. Both platinum and palladium are also firming in here, and the industrial metals, having almost been written off by a number of investors last month, have staged quite a rally over in the last few weeks. Copper, in particular, has held above the $4 level on that COMEX contract. It's at 440 right now. $4 had been the upper side of a 2-year range before the financial crisis. And it's now looking like it's an area of support. So that's really very encouraging from the perspective of global growth. The problems that you have in Europe and in the USA are non-trivial. The European crisis in particular is very slow burn. It's going to take highly indebted countries on the periphery a very long time to get out from under the kind of debt that they have accrued over the last decade. This is likely to remain a scenario where the news is going to ebb and flow, and the pessimism expressed at the beginning of the week has turned to optimism at the end of the week, and we can expect to go through a number of these types of environments over the coming years. This isn't something that is just going to go away and get better on its own. The USA is going to have to start on a program of fiscal austerity on its own. The trajectory of the national debt is of much more importance than the absolute level. The absolute level is obviously of concern, but it's the trajectory of where debts are projected to go is where the real problem lies. So spending cuts and revenue raising measures are likely to be in the future for the US domestic economy. We're seeing that commodity prices have been firm pretty universally from the soft commodity sector, where drought conditions and pretty dismal weather globally have helped to support grain and bean prices, and we're seeing that rough rice prices are also now starting to break out of a 2-year base. And industrial metal prices and energy prices are already quite firm. We've long predicted that commodity price inflation was going to be the next big opportunity, but it's also a major risk. Brent crude is back up towards $120. WTI is just under $100. And in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The last time that Brent crude was at this level, it formed a clear key day reversal, which was a tradable signal. We haven't had that just yet, and it would require a similar event at this level to suggest that supply is starting to gain control in the current environment. The low growth environment in Europe and in the USA, combined with the commodity price inflation right across the boards, is stagflationary. The domestic economies in these areas are unlikely to win the global beauty contest for the foreseeable future, and that is one of the primary reasons that we're focusing on companies that offer leverage to the global economy. And both Europe and the USA have a large number of those. Stock market performance in both of those regions, particularly in countries that are less affected by the Eurozone's peripheral crisis, do suggest that investors are focusing on the companies that are leveraged to global growth. Gold is at a very interesting level, and at $1,600, it looks a little bit overbought in the short term, but the medium-term uptrend remains extremely consistent. And provided that remains the case, we can anticipate an additional move to the upside. If we get the same kind of completion of a range that we saw on previous occasions and odd number of years, then we could be in for quite a substantial move to the upside. And that certainly couldn't be ruled out. With the steepening of the uptrend, the risks are almost certainly to be to the upside. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but wish all the best to all of you.